Welcome to the Strong Like Mum podcast.
Yay! This podcast is sponsored by Pregnacare. Pregnacare vitamin and mineral supplements provide advanced nutritional support for every stage of pregnancy, before, during, and after. They include vitamin D and the exact levels of folic acid as recommended by the UK Department of Health. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Strong Like Mum podcast. Today I am joined by a super fierce female, former WWE fighter and fantastic friend, Eve Torres Gracie. Eve, I promise you, I was thinking so hard about how to introduce you because I was like, how can I pack in everything you've done and everything you mean to me and how inspirational I think you are in one intro? I don't think it's possible, but I think maybe I could capture it just by saying you're a total badass boss mum. I don't know. There's any so many words I could use, but that's what I came up with.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Tell my husband that, please.
Eve is founder of the Gracie Women's Empowerment Program, a former actress, dancer, WWE wrestler, mother of two, and self-confessed ambassador of love. As the first person to win the WWE Divas Championship three times in a row, Eve has inspired many women on and off the ring. Today, we're going to be talking about female empowerment, self-defense during pregnancy, and how to build confidence during those tough parenting moments. Eve, hello, and thank you so much for joining me.
Hello, thanks for having me and just having an excuse to talk to you. I miss you, friend.
Any excuse just to talk for me is always great. I love talking. Thank you so much. Honestly, I appreciate it. I know how much you've got going on and you've got your two boys at home. So I really appreciate you giving your time. Can I start? In fact, why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about the Women Empowerment Program?
Sure. So Women Empowered is our program that is specific. Basically, it's Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, but it's created specifically for the most common and dangerous threats facing women. So I married into the Gracie family, which is the family kind of known for basically creating Gracie Jiu-Jitsu about almost a century ago. And for the last century, almost, they have been, you know, basically teaching Gracie Jiu-Jitsu to mostly men. And it wasn't until the basically like the 90s when they kind of realized my husband and his father and you know kind of the brothers in the family who were teaching this realized that you know violence against women is a huge problem. So they started trying to reach women and by teaching jiu-jitsu to women, and it never really stuck and they couldn't really figure out why. And then as I came in to the relationship, as I fell in love with jiu-jitsu and my husband, I guess.
I guess.
I basically, the first time I learned jiu-jitsu and had my first class, my immediate thought was almost anger about the fact that I had never learned it before. It felt like it was so effective, so simple. I felt like it evened the playing fields in many ways when it came to the idea of self-defense. And so my immediate thought was like, why doesn't every woman know this? And from the very beginning, I knew that my goals were to be to make sure that jiu-jitsu gets in the hands of more women. And so I worked together with my husband to basically recreate their program and kind of basically create it for women, not just jiu-jitsu taught to women, but jiu-jitsu for women, where we are addressing specific scenarios that women are most likely to face. And this is based on studies from law enforcement. This is based on, you know, what we know about survivor reports, but the 20 most common scenarios. Now the scenarios and the physical techniques are an important part of it. However, the other element that was not really tapped into is the psychology and how it changes, how, you know, a man attacking a man on the street is going to be very different than how a woman is possibly targeted. And so unless we understand that and acknowledge that, then essentially we're kind of learning this blanket thing that doesn't apply to us specifically. And so, you know, what I think as you know, at Gracie University, where we teach all of these programs, what we do really well is we create specific programs for each demographics. So this program was specifically created to speak women's language. And so we have seen in the last, 12 years that I've been involved now, we've seen this, just this incredible growth of women learning jiu-jitsu. And for many people out there, they may not know that jiu-jitsu is typically not, most jiu-jitsu schools you'll walk into, you might see one or two women on the mat. And when I first started, that's what it was. I would be the only woman in the classes often. Maybe one other woman would be there. And now you walk into our classes and, some of them are almost like one third are women training. And these are our co-ed classes. So that's just been, that was the mission from the beginning, is how do we get more women to feel like this art is for them? This is self-defense and they should feel like it speaks their language.
Yeah. And honestly, you've achieved that. I remember the class that I came to when I was in LA last time, and I felt so inspired when I left. But again, what you said right at the beginning, I kept thinking, how is this not something that everyone is taught? They should be teaching this in schools to young girls. Like, I feel like as a mother, as a woman, this is something I really need to learn, and something I'd feel so much more comfortable walking down the street if I had these skills. And it's incredible. They really are amazing. In terms of pregnancy, I actually did a lot of research before asking you to come on this podcast about self-defense and pregnancy. And the top hit when you search that is the last collaboration we did about self-defense and pregnancy. So there is not a lot out there at all. I'm very aware when I'm on my own somewhere, especially during pregnancy, I feel a little bit more vulnerable because I know I can't run as fast. I know I can't, I'm just very aware that physically I'm protecting the baby or the two babies at the moment that are growing inside me. So I'm very aware of that. What would be your top tips for defending yourself in pregnancy, whether that's, actually defense strategies, or I know you've spoken before about before you even engage in actually physically having to defend yourself against an opponent, what would be your top tips for defending yourself when you're pregnant?
Sure. So I would say they're pretty much the same ones that I would say when you're not pregnant. Interestingly, if you have some of these principles just part of your everyday life, then they will come into play at any point, whether you're pregnant or whether you're not, whether you're feeling vulnerable or whether you're not. But part of that, one of the most important principles we talk about is just distance management. So that sounds very simple, right? But it's actually, it's something that a lot of people don't think about. But basically in a fight, we'll say, or in an altercation, there's kind of two safe distances. One is all the way out, right? So if we can manage distance, and if we see somebody approaching us and we keep our distance from them, we will stay safe, essentially, if they can't get a hold of us. But there's another distance that is surprisingly safe, and that is all the way in. That means if I engage so close with somebody that I am now essentially like hugging them and holding them, and we learn these kind of ways to do that in jiu-jitsu, somebody cannot effectively kind of, strike you from the distance that they want to when you are that close. And that's something that is so far from where our intuition would take us. But it's a really simple principle that once you kind of learn it, you can apply it in different situations. But when it comes to this discussion of, what happens if we are essentially, approached by somebody who makes us feel uncomfortable, what do we do? And not a lot of women actually have an answer for that. One, like a definitive, here's what I would do or say. And so if we don't have a plan for that situation, we're going to go with whatever we kind of feel in the moment. Now, some people are very good, and women especially, I think women do have a very strong intuition. The question is, do we act on that intuition? Not always. And why is that? Because for some of us, our intuition has actually been kind of suppressed for many years, where people go, you're overreacting, or don't freak out, relax, you're making a big deal out of nothing. And so we learn to start to suppress our intuition. Whereas I think, especially when you're pregnant, it's like you're at your most primal state. I feel like everything is heightened. You are so aware of your ability to protect yourself and your child. And ultimately, this should kick in almost higher. So the question then is, someone's approaching us, you know, again, if we can just get distance and run away, great. If not, then verbal assertiveness, being able to look that person in the eye, have your hands up and say, sir, stop right there. You know, and you can explain to somebody what you want them to do and just be very clear and setting a verbal boundary. And so that is actually challenging for many people because they feel embarrassed. They say, well, what if he's actually not a bad person? There's all these excuses as why not to do that. But when you think about it, it's like, what is more important than your safety and your child's safety? Nothing really. So who cares if we do something, you know, if we say something to somebody that who knows, may or may not end in some form of kind of embarrassment, or perhaps maybe he is not a bad person and there was a misunderstanding. We don't actually know that. So we have to practice this ability to set verbal and physical boundaries with people around us. And that will deter many, not all, but many, many situations. If we can have that heightened awareness and then address them verbally and physically by maintaining distance with our hands up, with a posture, looking them in their eye, and being very clear about what you want. Excuse me, sir, stop right there. And then if he takes one more step, then we can elevate, and I won't yell into your guys' ear, but basically, you know, we would then escalate how we would address that person from that point on. And right, that's when they go, okay, this is not the target that I wanted, because oftentimes they do target people who appear vulnerable. And yes, pregnant women do appear vulnerable, or women with children.
So what I'm hearing is, number one, consider distance. If you can get distance, obviously that's what you want to achieve. And in terms of the ideal distance is far away. If you can't achieve that, then if you have the specific training, achieving close distance in order to practice the techniques that people would learn via sort of something like the Women's Empowerment Program would be something. But if you're not trained in that, that's going to be, I mean, I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable thinking, oh my gosh, I think this person's going to attack me. I'm going to give them a hug. So I think,
exactly.
I'm hearing distance, then asserting your boundaries. And the first step of that is verbal. So please keep away from me, or stand back, or, you know, anything like that. And then shouting out, the third thing would be shouting out to try and get more attention. Those would be kind of the first things that you would suggest.
Absolutely. Yeah. So drawing attention to the situation. We talk about it as like a very simple concept, which is the triangle of victimization, which basically means there are three elements that need to be need to be present in order for an assault to take place, which is a predator, a target, and an opportunity, right? Very, very simple. But ultimately, what we then have to look at is, you know, we're always going to be a part of that equation as long as we're walking around, right? We don't always know whether there's a predator there or not. But what we can try to assess is this a prime opportunity for somebody? And so what opportunity basically means is lower chance of bystander intervention, right? So when the chance of bystander intervention goes down, that's when our vigilance can go up, and we can, you know, our awareness can go up, and we may be more likely to engage in, you know, this assertive boundary setting in those situations, because we recognize, you know what, there is actually a prime opportunity for somebody to, you know, potentially target me. And then the idea is that if we do cause a scene right now, a bystander, even if a bystander doesn't intervene, if they think somebody will, then it may be enough to basically scare them off and realize that they don't want to get caught, right?
But so I have clear memories of times where I felt like that. So for example, leaving the hospital, I go for my checks. And if I go in the evening, or if it's winter and it's been dark or whatever, I'll feel really vulnerable leaving the hospital. So I've gone in for some really late night checks because I've felt reduced movement or something with the baby. So I'll go in, and it could be 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. And by the time I leave, it's midnight, 1 o'clock. And you leave the hospital and there's no one like patrolling. There's no security. It's just me walking to my car in the car park. And I often feel really vulnerable then. So my instinct, and I don't know what your advice would be as a professional, but what you're saying there about bystander intervention, my instinct would be, I'm going to call someone on the phone. So I'm going to call my mom, or I'm going to call my husband, or I'm going to call a friend, because it makes me feel like I've got someone with me. And I'll say, just stay on the phone and talk to me while I'm walking to my car. But then I remember hearing something saying, actually, sometimes predators will look for people on the phone because you're distracted. So how would you kind of view something like that?
So I think the idea of having somebody aware of your whereabouts and talking to somebody, I think is actually a great instinct to say, if something's going to happen, someone's going to know about it right away, right?
Right.
And saying, hey, I'm at the hospital, I'm in the car park, like they'll know exactly where you are. I think that's actually a great instinct. Now, the only thing I might recommend is it's almost like if you have a, you know, like ear pods, like I have the AirPods where you can have one in and you yep. can hear them, but you're still kind of very aware of what's going on around you. And you may look a little bit more aware if you don't have the phone actually to your ear, right? If you okay. have like just like one ear pod in or something like that. So, you know, it's a way to basically do both. You can still appear very aware and you know, you in it, if even if that's not the case, there's ways to appear aware even while being on the phone, right? So I think the thing with the phone, especially, is like if you're looking at it and you're scrolling and you're, you know, and like you're hunched over and your focus is somewhere else. But if you're on the phone and you're scanning, right, like your yeah. eyes are clearly alert and aware, yeah. then that actually, and they may actually say, oh, they're actually on the phone. So somebody would know that something happens. And actually, you know, that may even play into, you know, deterring them even further. So yeah. it really comes down to how you're appearing. And like, you know, there's not one way somebody looks. There is not one way somebody, it really comes down to if they are there and there is an opportunity and an opportunity presents itself, then somebody like this may act on that. And so that is a perfect example of where the opportunity would be prime. And that's a great time to have your vigilance high and to have an option and have an option there. So, and, you know, I guess the other thing would just be feeling like your hands are ready. And that's kind of the other thing about, you know, the AirPod or a, you know, one headphone in, is that you want to feel like your body is ready for whatever it needs to do, to run, to grab, whatever it needs. That having that feeling is, people can kind of read that.
And if, let's say now in a different scenario, so I'm throwing loads of scenarios at you. I'm really sorry. I'm like, okay, but what
no,
if I'm
let's
here?
Talk about them. It's great.
What about if I've got my children with me? So I've got two children right now, both really young. Rio is old enough to understand run. You know, he's 5.5. So if I said run, I mean, he probably still wouldn't want to leave me. He'd be like, no, 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 no. But Ezra certainly wouldn't. And, you know, he could be strapped into a buggy or whatever. And I'm about to have twins, so I'll have four children. If you've got children with you, and I'm totally aware you can't now run me through every single age child, because that's going to take us 18 years worth of conversation. But just in general, you know, how can women defend themselves if they've got young children with them, you know, under 10?
Sure. So this is a great question. And I think what we can break it down in is to two ages, which is basically unable to follow directions and able to follow directions.
Breaking it into two groups is much better than 18 years worth of.
Correct. So once children are able to follow directions and understand this idea of safety, like my, you know, we have children similar ages. My son is 4.5. And so we do talk to him about, you know, these types of scenarios. And we obviously don't make it traumatic for him or, you know, scary, but we try to just paint the picture where, you know, sometimes people, there are bad guys who may try to, you know, take things or hurt people, you know, and we kind of walk him through it. And then we ask him questions like, what would you do? And so we've drilled it in enough where he now knows, I would run to a stranger and ask them for help. And I said, would you run to a woman or to a man? And he says, a woman. So I kind of teach him, and that's actually what they've shown, is that for a lot of people, you know, we're telling children stranger danger, mm-hmm. right? But in all actuality, someone who's going to help a child will be a stranger.
Yeah.
Right. So we actually need to. What we need to teach children is more listening to their instinct and saying, huh, the stranger gives me the weird feeling and I'm not going to, I don't want to be around him and I'm going to listen to that. However, in a situation where, you know, there is danger, a stranger is actually going to be the one to help. So we remind them that actually you want to find a stranger, tell them what's happening, tell them to, you know, to call the police or whatever the instructions would be. And specifically to a woman. And this is because studies have shown that women are a little bit more responsive to these types of situations.
Do you he would actually leave you if you were, let's say, in a car park and you said, go, run, get help? Do you trust that you've taught him enough that he would actually go and do that? Do you think he'd be like, no, mommy?
I honestly know, because we just haven't been in that situation. I think if he really recognized that that's how he would help, then I think he would.
Yeah.
So that's the key, is that the best way you can help mama in that situation, the best way you can help me is to run away and to go find a stranger. Mm. And so if he thinks helping you is staying by you, then he may choose that. But if you say, help me run, run and find somebody and talk to somebody,
yep,
then he would be more likely to do that. So it's kind of how you frame it and how you talk about it.
Yep.
But really letting them know the best way to help me is to go find somebody and tell them. So that's the age where they can kind of understand and start to follow directions. And obviously the conversation gets more sophisticated the older they get, right? But that's like the very basics, is like, find a stranger. If you see a woman, you can talk to her. If not, find anyone and tell them, tell them to help. If you have a child who cannot follow directions, right? So a child who's younger, the most important advice that I would give, and again, this is very hard to hear and even implement, but it's an important one to think about ahead of time, is if your focus is on your child, you will not be able to defend your child. So what I mean by that is, if somebody does target you because you're vulnerable, and God forbid, let's say they actually are after our child, if I am trying to hold on to my child, I can't actually face the threat, right? So now it becomes this kind of, potential, like either a tugging thing, or basically I'm tied up by having my arms around my child, which feels like what we should do. But really what needs to happen in that situation is we need to face the threat ourselves. So it would be so much so that I would actually put my child down, maybe try to get them away from the situation, and I would try to handle him myself.
Okay.
So that is again, goes against all of our motherly instincts, perhaps in the beginning. And that's why it's an important thing to talk about. But if my hands are around my children, I am more able, he could easily overwhelm me with punches, with, grabbing me and I actually won't have the ability to defend my children. Yep. If my hands are on my children.
Yep.
So the focus needs to be on him. And we actually created a video of a few different scenarios. But for example, if someone has your child in their hands, instead of focusing on the child, basically an option would be to wrap your arms around their legs. Mm-hmm. Because now think about it, if they're holding your child, they don't have arms.
Yep.
Right. To basically go and wrap your arms around their legs, like dive and control their legs, and this person would fall down.
Okay.
And yes, your child would fall, but they would survive, yeah, right? And then they could get up. So it's this idea of, if we focus on going after the child, we are not focusing on the threat, which is this person.
This sounds like a lot of having to actually retrain your not your instincts, because I'm a big believer in trusting your instincts, but maybe even having to delve deeper than just that initial, basically not letting panic to overtake. Correct. Sense, I suppose.
And I'm not even sure it's instinct. It's more like reflex, right? We have certain reflexes that aren't necessarily tied to instinct, I think, or intuition, right? That is kind of this overall feeling, but our reflexes. And this comes down to, we know that in these situations, it's often fight, flight, or freeze. And we don't always know which one will be us and what type of scenario. And each, actually, people might have different responses for different types of scenarios. It's not like everyone has one response across the board, right? Like for someone, if it's for themselves, if somebody's hurting them, they may freeze. If someone's hurting their child, they may go into fight, right? So there might be different responses there. And that's the importance of really, to me, this is the importance of training, right? Because we don't know what our responses will be.
This is why, I mean, we'll get all the information from you at the end as to where people can get information, more information on your courses or any downloads or any online stuff that you provide, because this is where I think, how is this not taught? Like, I go into hospital all the time, pregnant, and I'm always taught about whatever, I don't know, they take my blood pressure, they do all these really important things. But how are we missing this key? You know, I almost feel like when you go home with the baby, along with like, here's your free baby hat that they give you, they should be like, here's an online link to a video that's going to talk to you about how to defend yourself and your children. It just, to me, it just makes sense. I totally hear everything you're saying there. Is there anything that we can teach our children about defending themselves? So now, obviously, we're stepping slightly away from talking about pregnancy, and we're now talking about for any women who have children, and obviously anyone who's pregnant once their children are older. Is there anything we can teach our children, A, about defending themselves, but also about not being pushovers, but also not instigating violence? I have that with Rio. So Rio is a really kind-hearted 5.5-year-old. He's still super innocent. He started school this year. And when he first started school, this boy pushed him over all the time. They're now friends and it's fine. But this little boy pushed him over, and Rio would come home and he was like, oh, he pushed me over. And I'll say, well, what did you do? And he'll be like, well, firstly, he'll say, I'll go and get a teacher, which I'm like, okay, great. But then every day he's coming home, he's like, he pushed me over again. And I just cried and then I was okay. And I was like, okay, I don't know what to do, because I don't want you to be pushed over and cry. I'm 32. Someone pushes me over, I'm getting up and I'm pushing them back. But I also can't teach my child, grab the kid and push them against the vent. So how do we straddle that balance as parents?
Great question. So yes, there absolutely are things that you can teach your child. And this is actually a great age. Ages, you know, 4.5, 5 is a really good time to start instilling some of these self-defense principles. So I guess what I'll start with is similar to what I started with women's self-defense, which is the first thing that we focus on. Well, I won't actually even say the first thing, because here's the truth. In order to ask somebody to set a boundary for themselves, similar to when I said, as a woman, you know, if you put up your hands and you say, sir, stop right there, right? If you don't have an answer to what would happen if he doesn't stop right there, you're going to be less likely to set that boundary. So we believe our ability to set boundaries is founded in our ability to defend those boundaries.
Right.
Right. So we actually start with the kids. We do start with these physical self-defense understandings and scenarios. But specifically with our Gracie Bullyproof program, that concern of, you know, I don't want my child to become the bully, and neither do I, right? That is what is so beautiful actually about jujitsu, is that in our Bullyproof program, we do not teach one punch or one kick the entire time. A child will never be taught to punch or kick a bully, ever.
Okay.
Right? And you say, how can that be, right? How can you defend yourself without those two things? And that's because, again, people traditionally think of self-defense as this like aggressive violence that's needed. Whereas jujitsu, really what it is, it's kind of fighting fire with water. So we teach children basically these kind of three steps, right? The three T steps. The first one is to talk to the bully directly, to talk to this child directly.
Right.
And we give them the tools to do that. We role play with them, right? And that's what I would encourage parents to do, is a lot of role playing. And so we actually have them practice saying, never do that again, right? And they'll start, and at first they kind of like look down and they're fidgeting and they're like, no, but never do that again. And they, you know, like don't quite understand this idea of, no, okay, like let's keep practicing, and eventually getting to the point where they can look someone in their eye, stand up straight with their shoulders back, hands to their sides, and say, never do that again. And it's like the cutest thing ever to watch all these kids like learn how to say this, right? But just giving them a script, giving them tools, and actually actually talking through what that would look like. So that's the first step, is to talk, right? So use your own voice, practice what to say in that situation. And you can come up with your own script based on what you feel comfortable. But for us, that's kind of a simple one of like a very clear boundary, like, never do that again. I'm telling you, I don't like it. Stop it. And then tell is the next one. So we obviously do believe that an adult needs to be notified, right? So tell a teacher, tell a parent, tell an adult, a trusted adult about the situation. So talk, then tell. Now, if those two things have been done and the bullying, it's tackle. The next one is tackle.
Okay.
Right. So basically, if those two things have been done and it does not stop and this child is persistent, then we say it might be time to tackle. And it might be, we typically say never to initiate the violence, but if somebody continues to, if a child continues to upset you and you've set your verbal boundaries and you're telling them to stop, right, then it might be time to, you know, to physically, you know, basically to show them that I need you to stop this without hurting them. And that's the key. So what we teach children is basically how to, like, you know, you would tackle a kid down and you would basically hold them down. And jiu-jitsu can do that. You can hold somebody down without punching or kicking or being violent and essentially not hurting them. Imagine it's like you tying them up in a little knot and you just say, hey, stop bugging me. I told you to stop. So now you're basically teaching them this kind of, you know, to negotiate with the bully. To have empathy for them even. So afterwards, when they say no, we teach them to like help them back up, help dust them off, and, you know, continue to go about their day. So it's talk, tell, and then the tackle. But again, the tackle can't happen unless a child knows how to safely put out the fire with water. And that is what we teach. So it's always, you know, never initiate the violence, only if you're defending yourself. But if that happens, then a child needs to know how to do that. Yep. And how to do that safely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. It's so interesting. I could talk to you for ages. I just want to bring it back to your Women Empowerment Program. And my question to you is, in your experience with jiu-jitsu and self-defense, how have you seen it change and empower women? Because I know, as I said to you, when I attended that class, I left, I felt so empowered. I mean, the first thing I did was I went home and I put my husband in a choke and I was like, look what I learned. And I remember you saying, like, you'll remember it for the first time and then it will start to dwindle. And so I did it the first day and I was like, this is perfect. And the second day it was still great. And then the third day I was like, oh, I can't really remember where this wrist and this hand and da da da. And then I just sort of, and now I just really have completely forgotten. It's terrible. But I really felt empowered and that feeling really stuck with me. And it's definitely on my list, A, to complete that program. B, I want to one day teach that program. If I ever had a daughter, I want her to do the program. How have you seen it? And the main catalyst for me is that feeling of strength and empowerment. Like you said, if you say to someone, don't do that again, if you don't have something to back up if they do it again, then I can completely understand you're not going to be fully committed to those words. So how have you seen it really empower women?
So that last element that you said is probably the biggest transformation I've seen in women who have come in seeking self-defense. Now, I would say the women who come into our classes fall into one of several categories, right? Some of them just like the idea and they're just feeling like, you know what? I just want to feel prepared. I just want to feel prepared if anything happens. And they're very aware of, you know, statistics. They're aware of what's out there and they just want to feel prepared, right? Others may have actually experienced violence in the past or abuse in the past. And I would actually say this is a large number of the women who come in to learn our program. And this is why we teach our program with kind of a trauma-informed approach, where we understand that there are women coming in who have a history of violence. And if I just all of a sudden bombard them with a situation, they may react, they may become triggered, and they might react to that with like a stress response. And so we have to be very cautious of that and very aware of it. But what we have seen, which is so probably one of the most like fulfilling elements of what we do, is incredible healing that happens for people who have had power feel like it was stripped away from them through violence, through sexual assault, through domestic violence, through abuse as a child, like whatever it might have been for them. And to have lived life feeling like they never couldn't, they can never replace that, right? They can never change what happened to them. But there is this in, this feeling of that will never happen to me again. And that is a beautiful change in mindset for many of them. That is really why we're doing what we're doing. They deserve, right? They deserve, they are worth defending. And really that is all we're trying to teach women, is that they are worth defending and that they can defend themselves.
Yeah, amazing. And as I said, I've experienced it and I've felt it, and it still sticks with me now. And I, you gave me a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu t-shirt, and sometimes I just wear it even now that, and I'm pregnant and it's like way above my belly button, and I walk around, and people are like, oh my gosh, have you? I'm like, yes, I've done the Women Empowerment Program. I did one class.
Yes, I'm a black belt. Back
yeah, exactly. You might want to step back. So let me just, to wrap up, ask you a question. During your wrestling career, you had signature move to beat your components. So what's your signature move to calm and control a situation when you're having a, like a difficult parenting situation? I have a really strong memory of an Instagram post that you shared years ago. I don't know if you'll remember, but you spoke about Haven, what did he do? He'd hit you or something and you took his ball away. And then he said, I'm sorry, can I have my ball back? And the way you handled that situation, really calmly, but showing strength as well, was something that really inspired me. And I've remembered that for a long time. So how what's your kind of signature move in terms of battling with your boys?
Yeah. I wish I could pull out my old wrestling moves, but I don't. So I would say there's kind of, I think if it comes to actually physically defending myself against my children, there's one, that's one side of it, right? I have an almost 2-year-old, and so, you know, they just like, he'll literally come at me with like a bat out of nowhere, and I'm just like, oh my God. But I would say one of my kind of go-to moves is just setting a firm, especially if they're trying to physically hurt me, I just say, I won't let you do that. And then if they try it again, then I actually do control them and physically control them in a way that is safe, obviously. And I say, I won't let you hit me, right? Or whatever it is that they're doing. And then they might cry some more. And then typically what I do is I just like hold out my hands. Like, I'm open to hug you if you need a hug, because oftentimes that's usually what it is. And sometimes it'll be, no, get away, and they'll need to throw, you know, just have a moment and let go of their emotions. But sometimes all they actually need is to just be hugged and held. And so I always open my hands. I just have them open. I don't force them, but then sometimes he'll walk towards me and he'll cry, and then I can just hold him and I say, and I can talk about it calmly about how, you know, how that made me feel, what he's feeling. And that seems to resolve a lot of the things that we have. And so I think it's number one, setting firm boundaries about what you will take from somebody, and whether it's your child. And then number two, showing empathy and allowing them to feel, and letting them know that feeling emotions is okay, hurting people is not. And so making sure that they understand that those are not one and the same. You can be upset, you can cry, you can feel, but I still won't let you hurt me or hurt your brother or yeah, whatever it is that he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I also, I know that you do this with your children, and we had a discussion about it a few years ago, I think before Ezra was born. We had this discussion with a mutual friend, Victoria, and we were talking about kids having tantrums and things like that. And I remember us all really saying that what's really important is that you can talk to children and communicate with them on a fairly adult level. And I've always done that with my boys. Even someone like Ezra, who might not understand, he's 2 today, actually, he might not understand these specific words that I'm saying, but I still talk him through it. And I, exactly as you just said there, I'll say, look, you can't bite, you know, I'm not going to allow you to bite your brother. We don't hurt people. Use your words. And he's got like 10. No, he's got more than 10. He has two. But the limited words he has, I say, use your words. And then he'll say, you know, Rio took balloon or whatever it is he wants to get off his chest. And I'll actually listen to him as if I'm really having a conversation with an adult, you know, and that he seems to really respond well to that.
Isn't it amazing that every human just wants to feel heard?
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, we all just want to feel heard, including a 2-year-old. And I've found those challenges as well with my 4.5-year-old because I found that I naturally go to, Haven, what did you do? Haven's my older one. Haven, when Hanson's crying, what did you do? It's kind of like, you know, my default, because it's honestly usually what happens. But there's been a few cases where I've said that and he didn't do anything. And I of course apologize. I recognize that I made a mistake there. But it's all about using our words and making kids feel heard. And so I I'm with you. It's also hard to do that when you are triggered as a parent. And I've felt, I think, especially in the last several months and during quarantine, over here in California, it was a very, very challenging time. I think for me, my patience was very limited. And so I think when we have limited resources, it's hard for us to be this open kind of like welcoming container for our children's emotions. So I found that was harder to do during that time. And so I also say, if you can't find it in you to do it at that moment, you know, not to be hard on ourselves. But maybe then you revisit it later and you go, hey, remember earlier when this happened? And you can kind of talk about it once everyone's calmed down. And again, even if you think your kids aren't really listening or focusing, they are.
Yep, absolutely.
They're taking that in.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for your time. At the end of each episode, I ask my guests for their strong like mum moment. So a time during parenting where you felt you personally overcame a struggle or were inspired by a friend or a family member overcoming something challenging. So it could be to do with you, or it could be pregnancy, parenting, anything in that sort of area.
I think one of my most powerful moments that I experienced through motherhood, I'll say, is maybe the birth of my second child. My first birth was a hospital birth and was very long and, you know, 30, some hours. And
oh my gosh.
Was, you know, I think all women experience like some level of either minor or major trauma during childbirth.
Yep.
Potentially their first one. And so my second one was just really night and day for me. And it was it was just this incredible experience that I didn't actually think was possible for me to have through a childbirth experience. And I'm very grateful for it. And I think it's just one of those that
So you were at home?
I was at home, yeah. So I had a home birth for my second one. And it was like this thing, it just felt like the most natural thing in the world to deliver this baby. And it was, you know, literally on the day that I my water broke at 8:30 in the morning, I was curling my hair, I was like, wow, thank you. I actually am going to have my hair done. I was going to go to an event that day. I was going to an event. So I was curling my hair, my water breaks. And I was like, well, might as well finish curling this hair because who knows when the next time. So I finished curling my hair. And then I'm like, all right, so this is happening. Call my midwives. And then I just went for a walk around my neighborhood. And by the third time I walked around and was having contractions, I came back in, my midwives came in, and it was a very quick labor, the second one.
Wow.
And just very special. It was kind of like one of these things where I'm like, oh my gosh, women, like our bodies are just capable of incredible things. So I would say that was one of my feeling of like just most empowered moment as a mother and in like that primal state of just, you know, giving birth in my home.
That's amazing. We are just so opposites. I remember doing NCT, which is what we have over here, like these antenatal classes with my first, and they asked us, okay, here's all these words on the table. Now, can everyone just pull out some words that makes them feel really positive about labor. And everyone had words like natural, you know, personal belongings, comfort. And I was like, machines, hospitals, drugs, lights. So I can't really resonate fully with you on that level, but I do appreciate what you're saying. And I think it's just incredible that you felt empowered in that moment, that you had such a positive experience. And I've had really positive births. So I guess it's possible either way and whatever suits you. And that sounds really incredible.
And that's really what it comes down to is what, like, I love that you know exactly what you need, right? And you go, this is what makes me feel empowered. This is what makes me feel comfortable. And having them just recognizing, like, this is what I want for my birth. And that's going to be different for everybody. Like,
yeah, well, amazing. And power to you. So just before we end, where can people find out more about you and more about your courses?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So you can follow me. I'm on Instagram at Eve Torres Gracie. And you can find all of our programs on GracieUniversity.com. So both the Gracie Bullyproof program and the Women Empowered program are actually available streaming. So you can watch from home. You can learn with a partner. You can learn from home. Especially the Gracie Bullyproof program is one that you can actually do with your children.
That's amazing.
So you can go to these classes together. It's a great bonding experience. I know for us now, still a lot of things are closed down. A lot of kids' activities are not happening. So this is a great one to do together and to be learning these things together.
Yep.
So that's at GracieUniversity.com. Also, for the first time ever, we are actually offering live Zoom classes here to anyone in the world.
Wow.
So if you actually want to learn directly with me and my husband, Henner, then you can actually participate in these Zoom classes. We do them for Gracie Bullyproof. We do them for Women Empowered. We also do them for our co-ed programs. And if you want more information on that, you can email zoom@GracieUniversity.com.
Okay, that's amazing. And as you said, you're on Instagram at Eve Torres Gracie. So if anyone has any other questions, I'm guessing there's links to it from your Instagram and things like that.
There is, yes. You can find the Women Empowered program is at Women Empowered GJJ, but you can find that from my personal Instagram as well.
Thank you so much for your time today, Eve. I really appreciate it.
I always love talking to you. Thank you.
This podcast was sponsored by Pregnacare, expert nutritional care for pregnancy, with you every step of the way. To find out more, visit www.pregnacare.com.